Good morning to everybody. Enjoyed the good song service. Appreciate the kind words and the good prayer that was offered this morning. And do beg continued prayers for us all as we go in and continue into the worship service. And I'd invite you to turn, if you have your Bibles, to the 20th chapter of the book of Joshua. I was trying to remember. I think the last couple of times I've been here, I've preached from the Old Testament. So I'm probably get a reputation for being an Old Testament preacher. Well, we're going to do it again. and as we have before, I've looked at a couple of different things that we could see point to Jesus in the Old Testament. Well, we're going to look at another example that points to Jesus and points to some glory that we and blessings we enjoy now and those to come. So this 20th chapter, it's pretty short, so we'll read through this. Begins, "The Lord also spake unto Joshua, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, saying, Appoint out for you cities of refuge, whereof I spake unto you by the hand of Moses, that the slayer that killeth any person unawares and unwittingly may flee thither, and they shall be your refuge from the avenger of blood. And when he that doth flee unto one of those cities shall stand at the entering of the gates of the city, and shall declare his cause in the ears of the elders of that city, they shall take him into the city unto them, and give him a place that he may dwell among them. And if the avenger of blood pursue after him, then they shall not deliver the slayer up into his hand, because he smote his neighbor unwittingly and hated him not before time. And he shall dwell in that city until he stand before the congregation for judgment, and until the death of the high priest that shall be in those days. Then shall the slayer return and come unto his own city, and to his own house, and to the city from whence he fled. And they appointed Kadesh in Galilee, and Mount Naphtali, and Shechem, in Mount Ephraim, in Kirjath Arba, which is Hebron, in the mountain of Judah. And on the other side of Jordan, by Jericho eastward, they assigned Bezer in the wilderness upon the plain out of the tribe of Reuben, and Ramoth in Gilead out of the tribe of Gad, and Golan in Bashan out of the tribe of Manasseh. These are the cities appointed for all the children of Israel, and for the stranger that sojourneth among them, that whosoever killeth any person at unawares might flee thither and not die by the hand of the avenger of blood until he stood before the congregation." So this chapter obviously is showing us of the cities of refuge that were appointed for the purpose that mentioned here, and that we'll elaborate on a little bit more. This was the fulfillment here in Joshua of things that were spoken about in the law, in Exodus, and Numbers, and Deuteronomy. It was reiterated multiple times of setting these cities of refuge for this particular purpose that we'll look at. So let's go back into the law and see sort of the beginning and build out till the sort of assignment of what these cities were. So we'll go all the way back to the book of Exodus and look in the law, and this will be the 21st chapter of Exodus. And as you're well aware, the law is very specific about a lot of different things as it goes through. It gives a lot of examples and a lot of conditions of in this circumstance. So the 20th chapter, we have the Ten Commandments that are laid out there, and there's one of the commandments we're familiar, "Thou shalt not kill." Well, as it's continuing in the covenant laws here in the 21st chapter, it's going to give some specificity and some certain circumstances of the death of someone. And in the 12th verse says, "He that smiteth a man so that he die shall surely be put to death." And this was very much the hardness of the law. It was eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. It was, if one kills, then they are killed. It's not much gray area there. It's black and white. But now we're going to continue. If a man lie not in wait, but God deliver him into his hand, then I will appoint thee a place whither he shall flee. But if a man come presumptuously upon his neighbor to slay him with guile, thou shalt take him from mine altar that he may die. So we have two different circumstances that is given. One that is presumptuously, and that's premeditated. That was something that they intended to do. They sought to take the life of someone else. If that's the case, they shall be taken and slain. Now, as we continue on, as you look at the law, like I said, it was an eye for an eye. And we saw mentioned there in Joshua the avenger of blood. It's the avenger and sometimes the revenger of blood. It's the same thing. And what this was a kinsman of the person that was slain. So that kinsman had the authority, but also the duty to render judgment, eye for an eye, and then take the life of the person that slayed their kinsman. This was in Hebrew called goel. And this is the same Hebrew word that if you were to go look in the book of Ruth and you see that Boaz as the kinsman redeemer, it's goel. It's the same kinsman. It's that close relative. So they might have someone in their family that they were the goel for their family. If there was vengeance to be meted out, they were going to do it. They were the avenger or revenger of blood. But then we have the other circumstance where it's not presumptuous, it's not premeditated, but it is an accident. They lie not in wait. It was not something that they sought to do, but in some sort of accidental circumstance, the life was taken of someone else. In that case, they were to be appointed a place to flee. And this is going to be a very important place in this circumstance. Because as we'll go on, we'll see that without this place, the avenger of blood has every right to render that judgment, to mete it out as the kinsman, as the goel, to take the life of the person that slayed their kinsman, unless they flee to this appointed city. So let's go to the book of Numbers, the 35th chapter, and continue to elaborate on this point and what we see here. It's going to talk more about these cities and about the specific circumstances. So we'll mainly start there, but I do just want to make the point at the beginning, the first few verses of the 35th chapter here. It is talking about some cities. And we've already seen six cities that are the cities of refuge. But it's talking about a whole lot more cities that are mentioned that were appointed for the Levites. So these were Levitical cities. So in the sixth verse, it says, "And among the cities which ye shall give unto the Levites, there shall be six cities for refuge, which ye shall appoint for the manslayer, that he might flee thither, and to them ye shall add 42 cities." So all the cities which ye shall give to the Levites shall be 48 cities, then shall ye give with your suburbs. So we have 48 Levitical cities that are given to the priests. So these are the cities that the priests will live in, they will work in. Obviously, there's work to be done at the temple, but think of the tribe of Levi. Not everybody can live there at the temple. There are these appointed cities for the Levitical priesthood that they will live in. In these cities, there was obviously the strict, there was no slaying or anything in these cities. There shouldn't be anyway. But even in the vengeance there, that shouldn't happen. But there were six specific that were refuges. Now, the 42 cities, they were sort of on in the day and they were off at night. You know, they closed down at night where people weren't coming in and out. The six cities of refuge, though, and this you can, if you want some light reading and read in the Talmud of some of this that's expounded, you'll see that in these cities, they were never closed. They were always available. So in the circumstances that the manslayer is fleeing the avenger of blood, they have a place to go. And so they were always open. It also notes that the roads into the cities were extra well maintained. They were actually wider than the other cities. And there are accounts of them even having signs that say refuge, refuge, pointing to the different cities. So that manslayer, as they're fleeing, they know where they needed to go. Now, before these cities of refuge were appointed, there wasn't many places they would flee. One of the places that was thought of a place that you could go for refuge was the altar. And there is an account in 1 Kings, the first couple of chapters of 1 Kings, there's a man named Adonijah. And David died. Solomon was the rightful heir to the throne. Well, Adonijah saw an opportunity to step in where there wasn't a king. So he made himself king. And he's going to take the throne. And you have Nathan the prophet, and you have some of those that were loyal to David that had seen what Adonijah is doing. So they let Bathsheba know about it, and then she passed it along to Solomon. And so Nathan and some of the others were going to go and seize Adonijah. And so you see Adonijah, he's sort of hanging out with all of his friends there. He's new king. He thinks everything's great. And there's a commotion, and he's asking what in the world's going on. It's these men are coming for you. So Adonijah gets up and flees to the altar and grabs hold of the horns of the altar, looking for mercy from Solomon. That's his place of refuge, was grabbing hold of the horns of the altar. The horns are symbolized and mentioned throughout the Bible. They're a symbol of power, a symbol of authority, a symbol of your prosperity, of your own status. They had a lot of symbolism. So grabbing the horns, you're grabbing those horns and sort of recognizing the authority of one. In this case, it should be God, the horns of the altar. And he's looking for mercy. And so that was his place to flee. And Solomon grants him the mercy. He, you know, if you're a good boy and you don't try to cause any trouble, I'll let you go. And then you continue on to the next chapter, and you see he immediately does something against, and he ends up losing his life for it. And that's what happens with some of those who seek nothing but power and status. But we not get too far down that. One picture of fleeing for that place of refuge. Well, if you look at the map of the nation of Israel, because at this point it had not been split into the northern and the southern nations of Israel and Judah, the 12 tribes were still together and united as Israel, and they were spread out across that area. And you had some on this side of Jordan and some on this side of Jordan. And so if it was the place that you had to go was into the promised land, to the altar, that may be a long journey for some of them. So these six cities that were in end up being established, that were mentioned there in Joshua, they were out of other tribes. You see Ephraim, Manasseh, Gad, you saw some of the tribes, Naphtali, that were mentioned, but they were spread out. You had three on one side of Jordan and three on the other side of Jordan. And the Talmud says that they were spread in such that you could be anywhere within the overall nation of Israel and be within a day's journey of any of these cities of refuge. And that's why they would have the roads and the signs up saying, here's the way. So cities of refuge were very important for people to know if for some reason there was a horrible accident and someone's life was lost. It was not, well, I better load up and get a few things and pack for my journey and go. No, it was drop what you have, what you're doing, and get to that city as quickly as possible. So these were the Levitical cities, but these six were special. We'll continue on down a little bit to the 11th verse. It says, then ye shall appoint you cities to be cities of refuge for you, that the slayer may flee thither, which killeth any person at unawares. And they shall be unto you cities for refuge from the avenger, that the manslayer die not until he stand before the congregation in judgment. So that's an important point. So this is not saying that if someone takes the life of someone, they can go run to that city and go, it was an accident, and then they're just safe forever. No, it's a safe place to stay until they had the trial. They would stand before the congregation. The congregation would judge them. And then, if it was found that they had done it presumptuously, had done it with malice, then they were turned over to the avenger of blood. It wasn't just a blank check to get out. No, it was a place until the congregation could pass judgment. Of these cities, which ye shall give cities, six cities shall ye have for refuge. Three on this side of Jordan, three in the land of Canaan, which we spoke of. These cities of refuge shall be a refuge both for the children of Israel, for the stranger, and for the sojourner among them, that everyone that killeth any person unawares may flee thither. So these are Levitical cities, cities of refuge under the Levitical law, but it was not restricted to Israelites. Anyone could flee to a city of refuge, whether they are of Israel, whether they're a stranger, whether they're a sojourner. It was open for anyone as a place of safety. If he smite him with an instrument of iron so that he die, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. And if he smite him with a throwing a stone wherewith he may die, and he die, he is a murderer, and the murderer shall be put to death. And if he smite him with a hand weapon of wood wherewith he may die, and he die, he is a murderer, and the murderer shall be put to death. If it is with malice, they will be put to death. And so when we see the thou shalt not kill, the more accurate interpretation in sort of our parlance and our way of thinking is thou shalt not murder. Because we see examples of people that kill, when it may be unawares, maybe within war, maybe under the command of God or whatever. But it, when it's murder, presumptuous, premeditated, that's when it falls under the punishment of the law. Now, here's where we get into a little bit more of the revenger of blood. The revenger of blood himself shall slay the murderer. When he meeteth him, he shall slay him. So again, this is not put in the court system and put on death row for years and until it comes up and then the government passes out the judgment. No, there is an avenger of blood that is the Goel, that is the kinsman that is going to slay the murderer. It says, but if he thrust him with hatred, or hurl at him by laying in wait, that he die, or an enmity smite him with his hand, that he die, he that smote him shall surely be put to death, for he is a murderer. The revenger of blood shall slay the murderer when he meeteth him. So it is a judgment. It is passing a judgment. It is not murder for murder, but it is eye for eye. It is slaying for murder, which I know is kind of a weird line to draw, but that's how the law had it. Now, if we continue on to the 24th verse, the congregation shall judge between the slayer and the revenger of blood according to these judgments. So again, the jury, the judge here, it's not the priest. It's not just the elders that's standing there at the gate. It's the congregation that's judging. It's a jury of their peers. And there's actually, if you read through the law, if you read through a lot of that, you see a lot of the things that our judicial system is based on the Bible. There's a lot of things within the law that we see mirrored out. I'll give you another example. If the 18th chapter of the book of Exodus, we see Moses that is sitting, it says, from morning to evening, and he is judging the people. They come to him concerning the things of God, and he is the one that is speaking to God, and he will give that advice. So all day long, he's sitting there listening to all these people. And then he has a visit from his daddy-in-law, Jethro, who he comes and sees him. Jethro is a Midianite priest. But he comes to visit Moses. He loves Moses, and he sees all that he's doing. And he asks, what are you doing? Moses tells him, and he says, this thing you do is not good. You'll wear yourself out. You'll wear yourself out and the people. And so he's going to give him some counsel concerning that. And tells him what you need to do is you need to select some able men that can help judge over the people. And if it is a big matter concerning God, the people can come to you. But if it's a small matter, they can come to all these other men's that will help share that burden, will help bear that burden. So he's teaching him to delegate responsibility. And that way there will be peace to you and peace to the people. Well, now in our court system, we have a Supreme Court, but that's not the final court in the land. We have all these other courts, all these other judges. Supreme Court is sort of, if it's the big things, constitutional things, they're going to take it to the Supreme Court. But it first passes through all these other systems. So there's this tiered system of judges. And some will judge over lower matters. Civil courts, criminal courts, all these different things. So that split of the judicial system, we see examples of that in the Old Testament as well. So that's just another example. So we have the slayer and the avenger of blood. So, I mean, if you kids, anybody ask what the preacher preached on? He preached on manslayers and avengers of blood. You know, that's I kind of enjoyed that when I was little, I think. Kind of exciting. These manslayers that did not do it in a premeditated matter would be more akin to what if someone was charged today with something like involuntary manslaughter, something like that. So, the congregation judged. 25th verse, the congregation shall deliver the slayer out of the hand of the revenger of blood, and the congregation shall restore him to the city of refuge, whither he was fled, and he shall abide in it unto the death of the high priest, which was anointed with the holy oil. Remember that point. We're going to come back to it shortly. But if the slayer shall at any time come without the border of the city of refuge, whither he has fled, and the revenger of blood shall find him without the borders of the city, and without means outside, without the borders of the city of his refuge, the revenger of blood, and the revenger of blood kill the slayer, he shall not be guilty of the blood, because he should have remained in the city of his refuge unto the death of the high priest. But after the death of the high priest, the slayer shall return into the land of his possession. So, he can flee to that city to have refuge. He can be judged by the congregation. If the congregation hears the facts, which... We may look a little bit more at that in a moment. But if they hear and find, okay, it was not presumptuous, it was not premeditated, it was not with malice, it was an accident, he's innocent. He can return, not home, but to the city of refuge. And that's where he's going to live. His family can come and live with him. They're going to live in the city of refuge, and that is where they have to stay. If he ever decides, I'm going to take a walk outside the city, and he runs into that avenger of blood, the avenger of blood can kill him, and he is within his rights to do so. He is only safe within the city. If he leaves the city, his life is forfeit. If the avenger of blood catches him before he makes it to the city and slays him, he's not guilty. He's not guilty of the blood, not guilty of murder in that case. The only place that is safe is in the city of refuge. That's the only place. If he's found that he is guilty, then they'll send him outside of the city. They won't slay him in the city. The blood is not shed in the city. They will kick him out of the city, and then he's fair game to the avenger of blood. The only safety, the only refuge is in the city. Okay, let's jump over to Deuteronomy in the 19th chapter. I was debating, and I'm going to go ahead and go here and get this. There's actually a couple of things we want to get over here. And as I mentioned, this is something mentioned throughout the law. So we're hitting a few different areas and kind of trying to grow the picture here. But I want to get in the 15th verse of the 19th chapter of Deuteronomy. Says, one witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or for any sin, and any sin that he sinneth, at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. So when he is judged before the congregation, it cannot just be one person that comes and says, I saw it, he did it. One witness is not sufficient. In the mouth of two or three witnesses.
Yeah.
That's how the matter is established. That same pattern continues on today. That same pattern is the pattern in the church as well. When it's dealing with any kind of conflict, any strife, any church discipline, it's in the mouth of two or three witnesses. I mean, if you've ever had the unfortunate circumstance where there might be a committee that needs to go and speak to a member, you typically, you're not going to just send one person, you send two or three, because in the mouth of two or three witnesses shall the matter be established. So there's two or three witnesses, and that is a requirement. If there's only one, they're not going to be found guilty if they're following the law correctly. That's the way it would be handled. Now, I want to back up here. We've got that. I want to see, as it gives that case of the slayers, it says in the fourth verse, it gives an example, which I love. You know, as you read through the law, it's telling you exactly, in this case, in this case, in this case, here's an example. I mean, it's very explicit. Fourth verse says, and this is the case of the slayer, which shall flee thither, that he may live. Whosoever killeth his neighbor ignorantly, whom he hated not in time past. So this would be the manslayer who should be deemed as innocent. Here's an example. As when a man goeth into the wood with his neighbor to hew wood, and his hand fetcheth a stroke with an axe to cut down the tree, and the head slippeth from the helve, and lieth upon his neighbor that he die, he shall flee into one of those cities and live. So imagine this picture. Y'all are out there working in the woods, cutting down trees. And as he's cutting down tree, the axe head goes flying off, strikes his neighbor and kills him. That's obvious that he did not mean to do that. It was inadvertent. It was a horrible accident. So what is he supposed to do? That his neighbor has just died, horrible accident. What does he need to do? Well, if something like that happens today, you know, you get on the phone, you call 911, you know, you start acting to try to do everything you can, and you contact people, you're not going to leave the scene. Because, I mean, you can be charged for that. Yeah. That wasn't the case then. If it happened, you're dropping everything and you're running to a city of refuge. Horrible accident, you did not mean to do it. But if his kinsman finds you, he can kill you. And he's perfectly in his rights to do it. Only safety is in that city. Lest the avenger of blood pursue the slayer while his heart is hot and overtake him, because the way is long, and slay him, whereas he was not worthy of death, inasmuch as he hateth not in time past. Wherefore I command thee, saying, thou shalt separate three cities for thee. And then that would become the six cities. And then down it says separate three cities, and then later it will say three more cities. So this is the purpose. Spent a lot of time building that picture of the cities of refuge, what their purpose was, and how they would be used. Now I said that this points to Jesus. Jesus is our refuge. So we're going to go back to where we started in the 20th chapter of Joshua. Those cities were appointed. And now we're going to show the picture of Christ in these cities. And we're going to start out with the cities themselves. Because something that is always a fun study is, as you're reading through an account and you see place names and people's names, and look at what they mean. Because there's so many times that God is putting some meaning in names. And so we look at these cities here, and I don't believe it is a stretch at all to look at these cities and see them as pointing all to Christ. Seventh verse in the 20th chapter of Joshua. They appointed Kadesh in Galilee and Mount Naphtali. So the first one is out of the tribe of Naphtali, and it's Kadesh. Kadesh in Hebrew means holy. It's a good place to start when we're talking about God. God is a thrice holy God. God is separated, sanctified above all. Thrice holy. Another thing, if you want another fun study, I don't know if you kids like that I'm giving all kinds of possible homework. Your parents may be noting this in their heads, I don't know. But if you look at these cities and look at what happened in each of these cities, there's some significance in the cities themselves too, but we'll save that for another time maybe. And Shechem and Mount Ephraim. Shechem means shoulder. Okay, you say holy? Okay, I got you. You said holy? I'm thinking, all right. God, holy, Jesus, yes. Shoulder. I'm not so sure. I'll give you a couple of examples. We can go to the book of Isaiah in the 9th chapter. And unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. The government shall be upon his shoulder. Jesus has the government, the entire institution, upon his shoulder. The law, the prophets, it all pointed to him. He is the fulfillment of all. He has all authority. He has all right. His horns are exalted. The government is upon his shoulder. He is our high priest. That's in all throughout the book of Hebrews. He is our high priest. Well, we can go back to the book of Exodus. We can start reading about the garments of the high priest. And that it will be very detailed. Their robes of blue, of purple, of scarlet, the ephods that they wear, the bells and the pomegranates. It's very detailed, but there are two stones. In the stones, what is engraved in the stones is the names of the tribes. They're written on the stones. Six on one stone, six on the other. Guess where those are placed on the high priest? On the shoulders. Why is that significant? Because the nation of Israel symbolizes the family of God. The chosen, elect family of God is symbolized in Israel. So there's a natural Israel, but there is a spiritual Israel. In Romans it says they are not all of Israel that is Israel. That Israel is there's two different aspects. That was the natural tribes of Israel, but Jesus Christ, our high priest, bears on his shoulder the spiritual Israel, which is the entirety of the family of God. And when he hung on the cross between heaven and earth, what he bore on his shoulders was his family's sin. He bore the weight on his shoulders. He is the fulfillment of Shechem. Kirjath Arba, which is Hebron. Hebron means fellowship. Fellowship in Greek is koinonia. And that is a beautiful thing to look at, the different koinonias in the New Testament, because it's interpreted several different ways. Obviously, fellowship is one of those. It's also translated as communion. It's also translated as citizenship, conversation, I should say, when we read that our conversation is in heaven. That means citizenship or koinonia, fellowship. So fellowship is what we enjoy with each other when we are in the household of faith and when we are together Whether it's, you know, having lunch over at someone's house and you have fellowship in the Lord. Fellowship, koinonia, is sharing something that you have in common. And so the ability for us to have fellowship in the church is because of Jesus Christ. What we share in common is we are all children of God, we are all sinners saved by sovereign grace, and we have an inheritance incorruptible, undefiled. We can have fellowship in that. When we take part in communion, we are together sharing that in common. We are remembering the death of Jesus Christ. We are remembering and showing our obedience to Him and our love and fellowship with one another when we wash the saints' feet. And our fellowship, our citizenship, our home is in heaven. We are strangers and sojourners here. Our home is in heaven. That's all because of the fellowship, of the citizenship, of the communion, of the koinonia in Jesus Christ. We go to the other side of Jordan, and we have Bezer. This is a fortress. This is a stronghold. So we're talking about refuge, and there's a lot of similarities between stronghold or a fortress. There's similarities, but it goes beyond that. Refuge is a place you can go for safety. A fortress is a place where you can go and be defended. The enemy will come and try to attack at the fortress, at the gates, at the wall. The safety within the fortress, within the stronghold, depends on the stability of that fortress, depends on those that are able to defend that fortress. Jesus Christ is the captain of the Lord's army. He is the captain of the host. We see a picture of Him riding upon a white horse with eyes that are as flames of fire. And He is leading the Lord's host, but He defeats the enemy by Himself. He is where we go and we are defended, and He fights the battle, defeats the enemy. He defeated death. He defeated the grave. He is our fortress, our stronghold. Ramoth means high, exalted. That's an easy one. That's like looking at the holy there. It's easy that to look at Jesus as high and exalted. God is high and exalted. When we see the Lord's Prayer, it says, "Hallowed be thy name." To hallow is to lift up and exalt the name of God. Ramoth. And finally, Goan, which is joy. Our joy is in God. Those things that Paul writes, he writes that your joy may be full. So when we read about the work of Christ, when we read about the church, it should bring us joy. He is our joy. So He is the fulfillment of all these natural cities. But He is our refuge. We'll look at one more place here in the Old Testament before we jump to the New Testament. And that's in the Psalms. So let's turn to the 46th Psalm. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. There were six cities three on one side of the river, three on the other side, all within at least a day's journey to try to get to. If there was that accident where it was killed unawares, they would drop what they were doing and flee to that city and hope they can make it there in time to get to the refuge. Our refuge, we don't have to flee and run and try to make it there in time. Our refuge, our strength is God, and it says He is a very present help. It's not a day away. He is at hand. He is right there. So if you were to look at your hands, that's how far away God is. He's right there. Spirit dwells in you, making intercessions for you. Jesus Christ sitting at the right hand of God on high, making intercessions for you. Very present help. The Old Testament is a shadow of good things to come. Jesus Christ is the fulfillment, but of better things. He takes what is there and He makes it the best. The law under the Old Testament, the atonement sacrifice that they would make year after year after year, they would have to make that sacrifice. I believe last time I spoke a little bit about some of the feasts that they had. And if you look at the feasts and you go and you look at what was eaten or sacrificed, you see that they'd also make an offering. At the first of every month, they'd make an offering. And then at the Day of Atonement, they would actually go into the Holy of Holies and they would make an offering, an atonement sacrifice, and hope that God accepted it. But then they would have to do it again and again and again. And first, the high priest would have to take a bullock, slay the bullock, and sprinkle it upon the blood on the mercy seat for his sins and the sins of his household, because he's a sinner too. Over and over and over. But Jesus Christ, our atonement, Jesus Christ, the perfect sacrifice, by one offering. He made one offering. He went once. And He perfected it. He was the perfect sacrifice. So you take the law, and Jesus is not just the fulfillment. He is the perfect fulfillment. He's the perfect city of refuge. For the last few minutes, we're going to go to the book of Hebrews. Look at a couple of things here. Starting the 6th chapter. And we'll start with the 17th verse, because I don't want to start in the middle of a sentence. It says, "Wherein God, willing more abundantly to show unto the heirs of promise the immutability of His counsel, confirmed it by an oath, that by two immutable things, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation, who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us, which hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, which entereth into that within the veil, whither the forerunner is for us entered, even Jesus made an high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek." So we have that consolation, but fled for refuge to lay hold, just like Adonijah wanted to lay hold on those horns of the altar, we lay hold on the hope. That hope which is an anchor of our soul. It is sure, it is steadfast. If you have a weak anchor, that you drop down and it's just doing it still, you're going to be dragged everywhere and it's not doing anything, that's not sure and steadfast. We have an anchor for our soul, that whatever storms may come, we are anchored by that hope that we lay a hold of. It is a refuge for us. Jesus made an high priest after the order of Melchizedek. And we could continue on into the next chapter. It's going to elaborate even more about Jesus Christ, our high priest. But with that picture in mind, I want to go back to something that I said quite a while ago at this point. That I said I wanted to remember that, so we're going to come back to it. Do you remember when the manslayer that was found innocent of blood, when they could leave the city? Said if they left the city, the avenger of blood could slay them and it's all fine. But there was a case that was given where they were allowed to go home. And that was the death of the high priest. So, for the life of the one that was slain, freedom would come through a death. If they were guilty or the avenger of blood caught them, it was the death of the manslayer. If they were innocent, then it was ultimately the death of the high priest. So we have the manslayer and the high priest that forever are attached together. And freedom would only come through the death of the high priest. Jesus Christ is our high priest. Guess what? We are all the manslayer. Now, not saying you all killed somebody. I'm saying that we are all the ones that are guilty of the blood. What blood? The blood that had to be shed for our sins.
Amen.
We are all guilty. So unlike the manslayer that was innocent, we are guilty. But yet we still have a city of refuge.
Right.
But we have a high priest that died. Our high priest died upon the cross of Calvary.
Amen.
Which means we can go home. And we will go home. It's not yet. But we're able to go home because we have freedom. We have been freed from the bondage of sin. We have been freed from the wrath of God that was due us because of our sins. We have been freed from that. But while we're here, there is still a city of refuge that we can enjoy. There's a couple I'll give you. One is God. God is our refuge. That is where we can dwell in safety and comfort and in peace. But since we're here in Hebrews, we'll turn, I believe the 12th chapter is what I want, if I can find it quickly. 12th chapter, the 22nd verse. But ye are come unto Mount Zion, and unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels. The Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, ye are a light unto the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hid. The church, I'm not talking specifically of the building, I'm talking about the body of the church, is a city of God. It is a city of refuge. It is a place that you can come where the high priest is, where God dwells among you, where we can enjoy His presence and we can have a refuge from all that that's without the city. This is a place of refuge which we can enjoy until ultimately we go home. And when we go home, it just so happens that our home is also a place of refuge.
Yeah.
It's also a place where there is no threats, where there is no danger, but there is only joy. Where a thrice holy God dwells. Where Jesus, our Savior, that bore our sins on His shoulders, dwells. Where we enjoy fellowship with God and with the saints. It is a place of refuge. These cities of refuge, it was, I'm sure for them, it was something that was seen as both a good safety, but also terrifying to think of. For us, we don't have to look at it with any kind of fear. It is a place of peace, a place of joy, a place of comfort, a place of safety. That's in God. May the Lord bless you, is our prayer.